Welcome to episode 46 of Magic FM. I'm once again laughing because Mashi is feeling the intro song, but I love it. I like our intro song quite a bit. Hey, Mashi, welcome.
Hey, Gabby, how are you doing? It's a little different. Good morning, I should say.
I know. We're recording during the daytime. Look at this beautiful sunlight coming in. I can't believe it.
How dare you rub that in? It is a sepia dusk nightmare outside my windows right
now.
Oh,
yeah. It's really rough out there, yeah. Huh?
Yeah, well, it's been brutal.
Yeah, I saw some pictures yesterday of how stuff has been, like how the sky looks in California right now, and it looks pretty scary.
It's really interesting. It really kind of does affect your mental health, what that outside weather is like.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I was talking about this in an earlier meeting, like it's just crazy how it hits you. But part of why I want to bring this up is we're doing this during the morning when we generally record Magic FM Thursday evenings. We're recording this Thursday morning instead of Thursday evening. And it feels a little different, right?
It's a different vibe.
And so I came to it with what I think is probably the biggest question, certainly on my mind and on the mind of the viewers. What exactly goes into a breakfast calzone?
Oh my God. Why?
I mean, I get bacon, egg, sausage, but is there red sauce or is it just ketchup because you have eggs? Like, how does that work?
I promise I eat more than just calzones. I really do. I really do. It has happened to line up so that every time we recorded Magic FM, I was eating calzones. We talk about food so much, you have to know I don't just eat calzones.
It's true. I talk about food is always on my mind.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't realize it. I really didn't know this until I was working, you know, CFB events. We're doing all the GPs. And as I got to know the European teams, of course, Europeans have a very different relationship with food than Americans do. And one of the things that they found both kind of, I would say endearing, but just kind of laughable about me is every time I travel, I'm like, okay, what's the good food around here? What's like the local thing? Like, what can we go eat? Like everything. I travel on my stomach.
I do too. I feel like that's just like such a crucial part of traveling. In fact, we will often go, I love when people do this. I mean, obviously right now it's not happening because Grand Prix aren't happening. But usually when people would go to a Grand Prix, someone local would gather a list of like, here are all the best places if you want to check it out. These places need reservation. These places focus on this sort of thing. So you'd know ahead of time, like, oh, this place, we have to hit up this place. Like, this place is iconic. And when GP Denver rolled around, I was like, I'm going to do my part for all the people who did their part and taught me about their city. So I made one for Denver that I've like now shared with a bunch of people because when they come visit, I'll be like, okay, well, broadly speaking, like there may be some new restaurants that I like that aren't included in this list. But as of GP Denver 2 years ago, like all the restaurants here are still awesome.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that every event, some judge would take that on themselves. There's like, you know, because there's judge apps and there's all these forums and groups when judges are staffed for a certain Magic Fest or GP. And someone would do all of that. And it was just like sights to see and, you know, food to eat.
Yeah,
and that
was one of the best things. I know.
Yeah.
Shout out to everybody who's put some work into like trying to show their city better by showing people like here are cool places and things to do and see and places to eat. Because I think everybody gets more enjoyment out of it. Like, you know what's so cool about doing this thing too? Later that week, both on Twitter and on my stream, people would come on and say, hey, I used your guide. I went to that restaurant. It was really good. Mm-hmm. We got this dish. And I'm like, yes, yes. I was so happy.
It's awesome. It's like this weird extended, like, you're coming to my town. I'm going to host you. Like, maybe not sleeping on my couch, but this is my hood. This is where I'm from.
I can show you what I know.
Right.
Exactly.
And it's great. It's like you're all this wisdom that we've distilled in the immeasurable number of meals that we've partaken in.
Yeah, for sure.
Finally be gifted to the world.
I play tested all the restaurants, so you don't have to.
And
man,
yet with all that
makes me miss
testing,
GPs. Aww.
I miss them so much.
Me too. I'm really looking forward to them coming back, hopefully.
It is crazy with all that worldwide playtesting of food and cuisine everywhere. You keep coming back to calzones. Not that there's anything wrong with them. Not there's anything wrong with them. It's just, you know, it's just funny to see that. So.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really deny some part of that. Anyway, how about we do a shout out for a sponsor of the podcast, Channel Fireball.
Let's talk about channelfireball.com.
We have a very cool event coming up next weekend. It's the CFB Pro Showdown. End Boss is Reed Duke this time. If you haven't seen the promotional materials for it, it's really cool. Well, basically the way it works is we ask the end boss who they want to be, like as the final boss or whatever. So Reed chose Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII. It's so funny because Reed has such a like happy, charming, cute face. very mm-hmm. unlike Sephiroth, if you're not familiar with the like super villain from Final Fantasy VII. So it's a picture of like, it's like the really iconic picture of where he's like, there's flames in the background and he's just kind of like staring at the screen. But Reed just looks really cute in it.
Yeah, it's Reed Duke. I mean, Reed's so funny when immediately, because I used to make this joke all the time in the warehouse and at GP's. And so as soon as you say Reed Duke, I automatically in my head, I go, oh, he's so dreamy. Like yeah. that's like what I would say every time Reed Duke would come up. Oh, he's so dreamy. And it is funny seeing him as the villain. Of course, all of this whole campaign we have around CFB Pro and the end boss, that's all Reed Duke. We announced the first CFB Pro. And Reed Duke immediately on Twitter was like, oh, I've always imagined a tournament where I could be a Shao Kahn type end boss. And that did two things. We have an end boss at every CFB Pro, and we have some crazy Photoshop image of that end boss. Yeah. That's like literally from Reed. Reed created that inadvertently. And it's one of the best things about
it. It's super fun. I actually am thinking about joining this one. It's new standard, so I'm excited. You can't really get me to commit to like old standard mm-hmm. anything, but new standard, I'm in for it. We actually
getting
have
to commit to constructed is hard.
I know that is hard, but I think I'm going to try it. We actually have a few bounties. This is a new thing that the CFB Pro Showdown is going to be doing. We're going to have like 5-ish bounties. I know some of the people featured in there already are going to be Riley, Ashlizzle, nice. I believe Alias V is going to be in
Ooh,
it.
Wow.
Yeah, there's like two more people I can't remember right now off the top of my head, but we've reached out. Oh, John Amari is going to be in it too.
Wow. And so we got good.
Yeah. Yeah. So if people, if you fight against the bounty, we're going to be featuring, like, we're going to be showcasing who the bounties are on the week leading up to the CFB Pro Showdown. If you fight against them, you get to take their bounty too. And if they fight against each other, they get to absorb each other's bounty for like a mega bounty. So then if somebody beats them, they get the mega bounty.
It's awesome. And you'll see that Gabby, of course, she manages all the affiliates and she kind of chooses different people to engage here. And she's very, very fair. She's got some ringers in there like Jana Amari, and she's got some fish in there like Riley, you know, so you could go either way with it. You know, who you match up with.
Really, you're just going to get lucky.
What your chances are at the bounty. The CFB Pro Showdown is, I mean, even just bird it, just hang out. The vibe at that.
Yeah, it has coverage. So you can actually just watch it on the weekends. It has an awesome commentary team. I'm not actually sure who's on commentary for this upcoming one, but they're always awesome. We're rooting for Juan, the community manager for CFB, to make it past round one.
He's 0-1 in all of them.
He's played in all of them, I think. He's played in all three.
Every single.
He's 0-1 every time. Cool. So we're rooting for him to make a deep run this time around.
I love his enthusiasm, though. He gets genuinely excited.
Oh, I love it. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, he's 0-1 and all of them. He gets so, and he's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make it out of round one. And I genuinely am cheering for him, you know?
Me too.
So it's a great time. Check out the CFB Pro Showdown. The other thing I just wanted to casually mention, because it's just so, I've been sharing it everywhere. It's so awesome, is that U-Box We Buy commercial. We don't need to go into U-Box We Buy.
Oh my God, I'll link it in the show notes. I'm really happy with how it came out.
It looks so good. I showed it to Elaine. I showed it to Tommy. I'm just like, check out this commercial. It's so great. It's so cool. I love that.
Yeah. So for those who don't know what this commercial is, it's a commercial I worked on with a few of our influencers, creators, and we got them to try U-Box We Buy, and then they tried it on their stream. And U-Box We Buy, we've talked about it on the podcast before. You basically get a box, put your magic cards in, then send them to CFB, and then you get an offer for them. It's really easy. But it was so cool because everybody just, like, I love how everybody showcased the way they did their U-Box We Buy, and everybody just has, you know, you can kind of see all their personality shining in the commercial. It was really awesome. So I'll link it in the show notes so you can see it there if you want. And everybody tweeted it out, but
it's so good. It's
I was really happy with it. I thought it came out awesome.
So you don't need, I mean, do U-Box We Buy if you want, but you don't even need to do that. Just watch the commercial. It's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. I was really, really happy with it. It was cool to work on this thing with everyone. Time for the actual show, baby.
Yeah, let's do it.
So we were thinking about talking about Zendikar Rising, but Zendikar Rising is going to come out and we're going to get to do like the preview event and stuff soon. So we were like, yeah, we could just talk about maybe highlight some cards that we like. But then we kind of kept talking about the other stuff that's going on in Magic, one of the things being the Tinkerer Cube. And we went kind of this path of talking about Cube and realized that we'd never actually done an episode where we just talked about Cube. We've talked about Cube a lot on the podcast, but never gone like deep into it. So we thought it would be cool to do that today. Go like do a big deep dive into Cube. And this isn't going to be a place to just get strategic advice, although we do have some towards the end. There is a really, really fantastic episode of Limited Resources that Luis and Marshall did. They've actually done it twice. That was, I forget what it was called, but it was like Level Up in Cube. And I remember listening to those and it really, really helped me strategically in Cube. So if you're looking for something like that, we definitely want to shout out the LR episodes that do this. This is more going to be like, what are some really cool things that people are out there doing with cubes? How we got into Cube, why we like Cube, and some of the cool design spaces you can go into it, slash what are some resources that you can use in order to start a cube if you haven't started one?
Yeah, I think the key, really, really, I want to underscore how checking out those strategic, we're going to get into it too, about the mindset you approach Cube with. One of the things I always get worried about is Cube is not just draft. And if you approach it thinking about it like, oh, I've drafted, you know, Zendikar Rising, or I've drafted M21 or Amonkhet Remastered, whatever, I can draft Cube. It's very different. You can't have that same like regular draft mindset. So understanding that, I think, is one of the key things. What is Cube? You know, it's super duper interesting. Do you remember the first time you cubed, Gabby? How you started cubing? What's your cube origin story?
My funny cube origin story. Okay, so I started cubing when I was like pretty new to Magic, and really, it took me a couple years before I really got into Cube the way I'm into it now. Part of the reason that was hard is because Cube can be intimidating. Mm-hmm. So picture this. This is me like circa 2012 or something. I'm brand new to Magic. I don't really know what card, like I'm not very good at reading the cards yet, maybe still not today. And a friend of mine says like, hey Gabby, I have a cube, I don't even know what it is, do you want to come play with my friends tonight? And so BK, myself, and all the friends that we met in Chicago playing Magic are gonna get together at our friend's like condo, basically, it was at a bar, to do some cube drafting. And so I'm like, BK, I don't know anything about cube, what should I know? He's like, don't worry, just like draft whatever, it's totally fine. Before we actually start drafting the cube, we're starting to have drinks, and I'm very lightweight. I am not, like, it really doesn't take much to get me to like be kind of like pretty tipsy slash drunk. So we start doing the draft, and by the start of the draft, I'm like pretty tipsy, like pretty drunk. And I'm like, nice. Oh my God, I can't do this. Like, this is way above my pay grade. BK basically tells me just like, it's okay, Gabby, it's just a draft. Just do a draft the way you normally would do a draft. And that was not good advice. Not good advice. So I get past this card. I can't remember. It's like 9.5 tails, I think.
Yeah. 8.5 tails.
8.5 tails. Okay.
Yeah. Two white for 2/1. You can give other creatures protection. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So picture this. I don't even really know what protection is. And this is what the card does. Okay. It's called 8.5 tails. White. It's a 2/2. Legendary creature, Fox Cleric. Has two abilities. For generic and a white, target permanent gains control. Target permanent you control gains protection from white until end of turn. And then for one generic, target spell or permanent becomes white until end of turn. Yeah. And when I see this card, my brain just starts melting. Like, I just can't. And I'm just
this
like,
is a bomb, though.
And so I look around and I'm like, BK, come here. And I have him sub into my draft so that he can finish the draft for me, because I literally couldn't do it. So he ends up drafting a mono white deck for me. That's why I ended up with 8.5 tails. And it was fun, but it was like a pretty kind of intimidating experience. Mm-hmm. I didn't really get into it until I started drafting it on Magic Online, where I could do that in a more controlled environment where I wasn't drunk and I had like the cards ahead of time and could kind of like research the cube a little bit without going into it blind.
So for me, I totally agree with the intimidation factor. Mm-hmm. When I remember, I think I started playing Cube when it was really kind of a new thing, because it was about 2008, 2009. And yeah, it was like, hey, we have this thing, it's called a cube. And it was our friend, I got to be careful here, because he has a nickname that he goes by that we all call him that it's not appropriate for the podcast, Jeff. And Jeff, I really have to focus on this, because that's not my, for years he's gone by a different name in my mind. But Jeff had a cube, and he was the one, he always had his cube. He'd come to the Superstars, this is before Channel Fireball, he'd come to the Superstars Game Center and play it. And Luis and Ocho and our other friend Brent Peterson, they were all really into it. And finally I learned how to play it. And actually the advice I got was not just try drafting. It really was, like, I remember the first time at that time in Jeff's cube, you could do really, really well if you picked up a Crusade and then just went mono white. Because knights, the pump knights, and I remember the white knights, they would table. So if you found a Geddon or a Crusade in a pack, you could. And so the first, I think it might have been Luis who just said, "Hey, Mosh, don't worry about it. Just try. Just go white weenie.
Just go white weenie." And that's good advice for a first time cube drafter too.
Yeah, and I did that. And the other option was either go mono red, like mono red beats, burn and beats, or white weenie. And that's how I started. And in Jeff's cube, it was all, you know, white weenie for a very long time. It was very, very powerful. It was good for me. It was in my comfort zone because there was a lot of old cards in the cube. This was just before, I think this was like Lorwyn Block, Shadow. Oh my gosh. That's right. Jeff's cube. The reason why Weenie was insane is the rebels in that cube were unbelievable. And he had actually labeled certain other cards to be rebel cards that you could search out.
Oh, like a paper errata kind of.
Right. So you could, that's right. If you had a rebel chain, you'd go nuts. And that's how I learned. And it became this, it became a real social thing where at the time Luis would drive from Oakland, he'd drive down once a week. And at some point when the workday was done, we would just sit around in cube like every night. Unless we were preparing for a pro tour where they wanted to draft that set, like team draft that set. Mm-hmm. It was cube. And the original Magic TVs were really about, Luis, stop cubing. We're going to film Magic
TV. We need to film Magic TV.
Yeah. There was so much of that. So that's how I found cube. And it became just an awesome thing. It was evergreen. We didn't have to crack packs for it because cracking packs felt like so much work. And it was awesome. And it became the way I played most of my Magic.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
I think that's one of the, you highlight one of the things that I like the most about cube, which is, I mean, we were talking about this yesterday because I've been playing the Tinkerer's Cube on Arena. We're talking about this on my stream. And about the fact that, you know, when you draft the new set, that's fine. You have to crack your boosters, do the thing. But the cool thing about cube is like you get to determine what the cards that are going to be in the cube are. And then you get to explore what drafting those cards in that cube feels like. And you just get to do that over and over again. And if that gets stale for whatever reason, you can just change the cards that are in it. So you get to control this very cool draft environment and make it your own for you and your friends. And it creates, it's a really easy and fun way to create this kind of repeatable draft experience where you're just doing it for the love of playing. As opposed to like, sometimes people play constructed because they want to rank up, right? But when you're cubing, you're just doing it for the fun.
Yeah, it is just for funsies, and I see I totally skipped over things. So why don't we talk about what is cube, which is actually the question I asked, and I dropped 3 points. Gabby made the show notes, and I just realized, wait a minute, I totally destroyed the order that
she It's okay.
I think
a lot of people will have a general idea of what cube and cubing is like, but to give just a little more precise description, a cube is a set of cards that have been put together for you to draft. It can be any sort of theme. That's one of the things we're going to get into this podcast because we tweeted out and we had, it's funny, I tweeted this out at the beginning of a meeting and then Mashi was getting responses during the meeting. I was like, why am I getting so many responses?
I thought I was getting canceled because I was getting blown up and I was like, did I tweet something that did I do something stupid? Because I'm always worried that like 5 years ago you tweeted this out.
Yeah. And then someone what I had asked is I asked people like, hey, do you or your friends have a really unique cube idea? If so, we would love to hear it because we want to showcase like the range of things you can do when you're cubing. And so people had some really, really amazing suggestions of what they do for cube or cubes they plan on building or cubes that they've played and or their friends own. And we're going to go into that later in the podcast. But basically the cube will be either 360, 540 or 720 cards, depending on what kind of drafting experience you want. If you want 360 cards, it means that 8 players in the queue will take every single card in the cube, which means you will always see every card in the cube. The next size that is the most common size for cubes is 540, which means that you will not see all the cards in a given draft, which means that if you have combos and stuff, you might not, like if you have Splinter Twin, you might see Deceiver Exarch and you might not see Splinter Twin, something like that. And then the largest cubes, and this is kind of as large as they go, are 720, which means you are not very likely to see, like you will have a very different draft experience almost every time. Every size has different merits. 360 will just always be a very consistent draft archetype. 540 is the most popular one because it changes the draft every time, but you can reliably see pieces of the combo. And 720 is if you just like can't even make cuts, you just want to have all the cards in there, you just play 720.
So what size is your cube?
540.
Yeah, I have a 540 as well. So it's interesting. I really, really fair. The 360s, I don't like the idea that you always know that other combo piece is out there. I think that you want, because, and this is where I know this is where the draft versus constructed side really comes in. Because in draft, one of the joys you have is in a regular set draft, is you crack something that's a build around, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna go for it. You know, I'm gonna see if more cards, you know, for this type of build around hit. And I think that's exciting. And yes, when that misses, you're like, oh my gosh, I have a pile. But when it hits, it's just like, you love it. You're like, oh, I'm in it. Yeah, it's so good. So I love that. The funny thing though, for me in cubing, is what's the most common number of players you have when you cube? 8, 6, 2?
So I want to say 8, then 6, then 2, because it's really hard to do a cube draft with 4 people. But when you get 2 players and you have a cube, then you can do like Winchester draft or Winston draft or like the, what is it, something tower, command tower or something. It's like the one where you keep taking from the top of like the big tower. So there are a lot of ways that you can play cube even with just another person. But generally speaking, you want 8 players in the draft because that will just lead to the most normal cube draft experience.
So it's funny. I'm like in the exactly opposite order. My cubing life, it's 2, 6, 8.
That's
because
funny.
For some reason with our cubes, we ended up Winston drafting a ton. And I think maybe that was just availability. It's like, oh, hey, Gabby, you want a cube? And then just Winston draft. And so I am so used to Winston drafting cube. For a while, I was like, why would you even do 8 players? Like, it was like a 2-player format.
That's really funny to me.
And I think it's one of the ways, one of the things I really want to highlight about cube and what we're seeing on Twitter with this question. And we ask questions like, you know, what are different cubes like? Cube really should be, it's a unique, great experience. Like you can make it your experience. You know, if you want it to be a Winston cube, make it a Winston cube and do that. You know, cube, one of the real beauties I think of cube is you get to own it and make it your own and bring out what you want to bring out of it and engage with it the way you want to engage with it. And that's one of the great, great things about cube. And I think we see a lot of that in Commander. I think that's why Commander is so well received. It's kind of that constructed, but I get to add my own flavor to it. And this is kind of like a limited version of that with cube. It's a closed environment, and you know, you're going to see in a 360, you're going to see every card's going to get out there in a 540, a good majority of them, so you can kind of count on it. And then the 720 is kind of like anything goes.
Yeah, so 720 is like all bets are off. Like anything could happen in the draft. And I think 2 drafts are not going to look the same just because you're not likely to see the same cards draft to draft.
Let me ask you this, because this is how it is in my cube. And I'm not sure how common this is or not, but do you have the exact same number of all of the colors in your cube?
Broadly speaking, yes. That said, it's not always like... I'm sure this is going to come as a surprise to no one, but there are more blue cards in my cube than there are other colors. And it's not even by like that much. But what ends up happening is like, if you just try to shoehorn that every color should have the same number of you know, like hybrids and multicolor cards and cards that are like a 1, 2, 3, 4, it just ends up not being that way because a lot of times you support a specific archetype. So you don't need a 7 white drop as much as you need like a bunch of 1 drops and 2 drops if you're playing white weenie. And the same is true with like the red cards, right? So... It is fine to not have like, because there are some websites you can use, and like those 2 websites that I think we can recommend are Cube Tutor and Cube Cobra. I think they're both awesome for managing your cube. That is where I manage my current vintage cube. And it just doesn't make sense for you to try to like have every single color follow the same scheme because you're supporting different archetypes. So that's just a decision you have to make as a designer of that cube.
So what's the plus or minus for you? Because you can't have like 300 blue cards.
There are less black cards in my cube, and there's just like a few more blue cards. Dude,
the black cards
are awful in cube, dude. I don't make the rules. This is why we keep making the joke about ink guys and how can it possibly still be in the cube? And it's like, well, the next best option is Noxious Gear Hulk. Wow, the options are bad.
Wait, I mean, but this is where themes come in, where it's like, yeah, okay, you know, forget the 5-drop, like just put in Necro. I don't know how good Necro is in cube.
I don't think it would work in cube very well, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are some like really broken black cards from like the ye olde days of Magic. Yeah, that is known. You know, Yogg-Will is the card, but
yeah.
There's also a lot of like really mediocre creatures that manage to sneak into like various iterations of the vintage cube. And it's like, how is this possible that this is the best thing that we could come up with?
So I think you answered my follow-up, which is what about the guilds? You don't think you need to keep guilds or hybrids?
I keep the multicolored cards. Those I actually try to keep even because the multicolor cards tend to be more powerful. And so, like, you can also kind of compare the multicolored cards to other cards in the cube that kind of functionally do the same thing. So if you have something like Reflector Mage, that's the name. If you have a Reflector Mage in your like hybrid white blue cards, you maybe don't need Manowar as much. So, or the opposite, right? If you have Manowar, then maybe you open up the spot for that to be like the 2/3 Geist that counters a spell when you cast it. Like it could be that. Something like that. Like that could be better than like a Reflector Mage, for example. So that's something that you can take a look at when you're designing your cube.
And I think part of what you're touching on too is like, what is the color identity? If it's like an EDB cube where there's a lot of bouncing and that's part of what blue's color identity is, maybe having the extra bounce creature is good. So you get to work, you get to see what the core identity, and I always start with the color. Like red's identity, unsurprisingly, is aggro and land destruction in my cube. And then when I look at Rakdos, I'm looking at things that support aggro, land destruction, that kind of stuff, or give you other types of control. So I was just curious in terms of like the tinkering. I do keep all of the numbers the same. So there's the exact same number of white cards as blue cards, as red cards, as white cards in my cube. And then all of the guilds, if I recall correctly, have five gold cards and I think five hybrid cards as well. Mm-hmm. So I did try to curate that and keep that, you know, all the same. And this is just, you know, for some reason in my mind, that kind of like made more sense to me. You don't have to do it that way, obviously.
Yeah, I think the cool thing is you kind of get to decide if that's the way you want to do it or not. Like one of the things that kept happening with my cube is I realized after the fact, after I had bought the lands that I wanted to have Mirage lands in there, that to the surprise of no one, the people that we cube with here all are drafting blue. So I needed way more blue basics in my deck.
Have you heard the story about Luis and Paul's cube that they made?
Yes, we actually tweeted the picture of how they kept tally of who was winning and who was not winning.
But do you know what the contents of that cube were?
No.
The percentage of blue cards in that cube, and this was Paul Chian and Luis's cube, and it was not just majority blue, I think it was like 70% blue cards in that cube.
That does not surprise me at all.
All they would do is be like, oh, this is how they built their cube. Please don't do it quite this loosey-goosey. They'd be like, oh, this card would be so busted in cube. And they would just put it in the cube.
Yeah.
And every card that they would look at, like, this card would be so busted was blue.
Yeah, so, like, weird how the cube ended up being all blue cards.
Yeah. And so I was like, having a little bit of intention with how you want to build it is really, really important. So one of the things I think is a really good question for those, because like it's not just intimidating to play cube, it's intimidating, you know, it can be very intimidating to build cube. So what advice would you have for someone who wants to start their own cube?
Totally. So the nice thing about cube is that because there are no like right, there's no right and wrong with it. So you can start out with an extremely loose cube that gets better as things go by, as time goes on. So the cube I have now is a vintage cube and it's like well thought out, and I know a lot more about, you know, cubing these days, so I can make a better cube. But when I first started my own cube, it was just like the first cube I ever made. It was kind of like a Return to Ravnica cube because that's the time that I got into Magic. So it was just cards from Return to Ravnica plus miscellaneous other things that I had trade bindered other people with. Like at the local shop, I'd be trading cards. And they had a card that I was like, wow, that looks really cool. I want it for my cube. Let's trade for that card. So it was really just like, it's just like a monstrosity. There was no rhyme or reason. It was not well managed, nothing like that. But it was still fun. My friends and I, we still liked drafting that cube. And I remember one of like the gifts that BK got me for one of my birthdays was like a cube box where I could put that stuff.
Nice.
And we put the tokens and stuff in it. So one of the things that you can do is like, you don't have to, don't get overwhelmed by not having all the cards that you need. You can really put anything you want in there and you don't even have to worry about it being like super balanced or anything. It'll still be fun to play. Obviously, that's something you can refine as you go on, but you don't have to have it from the get-go.
Yeah. And one of the things that I did, so my cube is woefully out of date, by the way. The last set to be added to my cube at this point was Conflux.
Dude, that is so outdated. My God.
It is unbelievable. So what's crazy too is like Kevin Imami, the kind of director of sales at Channel Fireball, he was telling me like all these cards that have spiked up in value that I was like, I totally have one of those in my cube.
Oh my God, that's really funny. So
it's just kind of marinating in the corner and gaining value. But, and I remember I went to revisit it. I was like, oh my God, what do I take out? What do I put in? And I feel so much pressure to update it. And then I realized no, I just kind of I love where it's at. Where mine started is I actually bought someone else's cube that they were selling a Channel Fireball. I went to John. I'm like, look, I'm either going to buy these from the store. He's like, no, you know, just go ahead and buy it. It's a bunch of one-ups. It's fine. So I bought them for, it was actually another employee who ended up selling it to me. And the way it changed was kind of similar to the Paul and Luis strategy of like, oh my gosh, this card, I just drafted with this card, or this card looks like it would be so good, I'll put it in. And one of the things I really, really did when I took over this cube, I made a lot of changes right away because I wanted certain things. Like I wanted white weenie to be a thing. I wanted, land destruction and aggro red to be a thing. I wanted ramp into big green and five color to be a thing. So like there was all these things, like I approached each color identity and then built from there. And one of the things I did also is I couldn't afford to buy everything all at once. Mm-hmm. And so I had like, okay, maybe I'm trying to think, I can't, and an example doesn't come to mind right now, but it would be something like, I can't get a Flame Tongue Kavu right now, so instead I'll have Sandstalker. I think they're both uncommon, so that's a terrible way to look at it.
But that could just be a card availability thing, and that's something right. You can very easily do in Cube. It's just like, hey, eventually I would like this to be a Mox, but you know what? I don't have a Mox, so this is going to be a Simic Signet. Like,
totally.
You can just
totally.
Do that's stuff
That's a
great like
that. Way to do it. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that, by the way, Signets are busted.
Yeah, Signets are usually very good.
I actually ended up having to take them out of my Cube. But I think that's a real, you know, because so often I think like we say the perfect is the enemy of the good, and you have this vision for what your cube wants to look like. Put some stand-ins in, test them out, and by the way, you may find some hidden gems that way. And I think that's a great way to do it because you have those cards. Maybe it's just draft chaff, but it's a stand-in for a different card. It could end up being really, really good, and you get to play with that other card in mind and say, you know, this should be an FTK.
Yeah. What if this were an FTK? Like, how differently would it be? Or is Sand Strangler okay? Like, it could be. Yeah. It might just be fine. I really liked one of the things that you suggested too, before we actually get into examples of you do want to think about like, what is the goal or like, what's the shtick or the premise of your cube? And if that's the case, what kind of archetypes do you want to support? Like, you do want to make sure that the cards in there are in there for a reason. So like, you can take a look at a red two drop and you're like, yeah, this is here for like the mono red players. Or if there's a combo card, if you have something like Yogg-Will, maybe you support an archetype like Storm and it makes sense for you to have Yogg-Will in there. But if you don't support Storm, it may not sense to have like, why is there like why is there like a Poetic Ritual in here aren't going to be like trying to get Storm count or something like that. So even if you don't have the widest card availability, it is still important to take a look at the cube and make sure that the cards are in there for a reason. And even if the reason is like, hey, a control deck might want this because this is a good 2-for-1, that's a good enough reason. But you do want to make sure that the cards are there and with a purpose.
I agree. Before we dive into the different cubes, Gabby, I just want two quick questions. One, do you like powered cube or do you like non-powered cube?
I like the powered cubes. My enjoyment of the powered cube came as I became a more proficient cube player, because I do think that the powered cubes are really high in terms of like nonsense and broken things that you can do. And the first time I encountered, it's like the first time you play Modern and you played against like Modern Storm and you showed up with your Boggles deck, which is taken out of my playbook, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm here with my Slippery Boggle. I'm going to put an aura on it. And then I played against somebody who like turned 2 Storm me or something. This is back before there were a bunch of bans that made Storm bad. And I was like, this is stupid. I don't like, why did I even bother showing up with my Boggles deck? So the powered cube can feel like that, especially if you're not familiar with what the archetypes are or like what the broken things are, where you do something that seems very fair and they do something that seems very unfair. So I think as you also become more experienced, you will like more things like the powered cubes. What about you, Moshi?
I like the non-powered because I like the slower game. I like the slower pace of play.
Yeah,
I like
that's cool too. That's a feature of the like non-powered cubes.
Yeah, and that's the main reason I really like them. So Lotus or Sol Ring?
I think Sol Ring.
I think so. Mox, any Mox or Sol Ring?
Sol Ring still?
I think so. Ancestral or Sol Ring?
Ancestral then, I think.
You really? I think Sol Ring is my overall pack one, pick one.
Sol Ring, it's funny because I think people don't think Sol Ring is that high, but Sol Ring is so unbelievably powerful. Oh my God. I think I'd still take Ancestral over Sol Ring, but yeah, I think Sol Ring beats almost... like, it's debatable. Like, if you're drafting Storm, you obviously want Lotus. It's obviously like completely broadly speaking, Solring is just very powerful.
Yeah, it's so good. What do you have? And then, okay, this my other thing is like, do you have a favorite strategy that you go to blind? You know, and you're sitting down a cube.
At this point, my range with cube is really wide, where there isn't like one thing that I like love above everything else. The only archetype that I've legitimately tried to draft a lot and have not enjoyed that much is Storm. I like watching other people play Storm. It's just not really like what I find fun in cube. So basically name any other archetype and I'm there. Like
I'm with you. I hate Storm and I never try to draft it. For me, and this is just pure greed, I love all of the spells in cube. And so if I see an opportunity with ramp into five color good stuff, I will immediately do it. Cause I love the idea of like, I'm just going to take the best card in this pack. I'm going to take the best card in this pack. And I have like, you know, Sacra Tribe Elders or Cultivates or whatever. And I'm going to get there. And I just, that is, it used to be all like, obviously mono red, like land destruction, but I love five color good stuff. It's just like so fun. Every pack. So.
I love those like, five color pile decks with like Golus are also pretty good. Like those are some of the places you can go when you have five colors. You can just get super greedy with it. All right. So the next thing we wanted to go over is we tweeted out and asked, do you or your friends have a unique idea for the premise of your cube? We want to highlight how diverse and unique cube ideas can be. Some examples, Grixis cube, Mono Green cube, All Legendary cube, etc. So we tweeted this out. We got awesome engagement. I'll make sure I put it in the show notes if you want to go see everyone's suggestions. But people were basically chiming in with like, hey, this is what me and my friends do for my cube, or this is what I plan on doing in a future cube. And we hope that kind of highlighting some of the stuff that people are doing out there gives you a unique idea for, hey, it doesn't have to be a vintage power cube. It doesn't have to be this like super complicated thing. It can be like my cube can have a unique spin and be very cool. And some of them are even like just made with draft chaff, literally. So
totally.
Yep.
I think that, you know, there's tons. And one of the things I think you can start as a premise, and you can see this in the comments here, are what is it you like best? Like you can have an all creature cube. You can have, so for instance, like one of the things that's very, very, very heavily present in my cube is EDB creatures. I love creatures that have entered the battlefield effects. Yeah. I also love things like Recurring Nightmare and Survival of the Fittest. So there's, my cube is chock-a-block full of that. And I could easily pivot to an all creature cube. I don't know how great that would be. That'd be a very slow pace of play. But, you know, finding a favorite card or a favorite mechanic or a draft set that you liked and really zeroing in on the reason you like drafting that set can just be where you grow that cube from. And we're seeing tons of that in the comments, which I think is awesome.
This is awesome. So this is a suggestion by Vincent Kitali that said that they have a pet card cube where everyone in the playgroup picks a pet card, and the person who designs the cube makes sure that the pet card gets to be one of the archetypes. So like maybe it's a creature that like, maybe it's Manowar, like enter the battlefield, bounce something. So maybe they can choose Manowar and they make sure that like Blink, like blue-white Blink is a supported archetype because that's where Manowar could really shine. Or things like Thassa that blinks creatures, like Grand Arbiter, like that sort of stuff. And it's funny, they say that it actually turns it into a tough thing because people are like, oh my gosh, like the pet card I choose is really important because it's going to be like an entire archetype in the cube. So we have to make sure that we choose a good one.
I love that level of like seriousness. I was like, this is serious business here. Okay. This is going to affect.
Yeah. You got to choose a good pet card.
Yeah. At mid-tier ramen, Kelsey, who is a longtime listener, shout out to Kelsey. He tweets at us all the time and says, and this is something I've seen a lot of. My friend is working on an Invasion and Odyssey block cube for us Magic boomers. It's kind of like a BuzzFeed article cube. But there are these things, we didn't talk about this earlier, where you have, a lot of people do have block cubes, like only cards from Odyssey block, only cards from, or, you know, combining Invasion and Odyssey block. And I think that's really, really cool too.
Yeah, one of the things I've seen is like, or something that's very common to do is people will make a cube for a specific set where they're basically trying to make sure they get all the cards from the set. And then they figure out distributions for like what shows up in there. And that basically means that like if you made an Innistrad cube, you could always draft Innistrad with it. Like basically for as long as you own that cube, you'll be able to draft OG Innistrad. And it's basically going to be like a normal, it might be a little more powered, but it's going to simulate drafting Innistrad.
Have you ever drafted any of those cubes? I've never done that, the block cube, and it's something I'm always interested
in. I've done one before. I forget what set it was for. But it was like drafting the set. So that was really? Cool. Like if you really liked that set and you make a cube for that set, you can basically like draft a set always. And I think people have done that for some of the formats that people love, like Innistrad, Ravnica, Khans, that sort of thing.
Triple Rise was super popular too. I remember that one. Or no, it was Triple World Wake. Sorry. Triple World Wake was like super popular, I think.
Here's a really good suggestion from Synthetica. It's a morph cube. And so it's just cards that like from Khans or Onslaught, any cards that existed that have the morph mechanic, plus all the payoffs and things that you would see for morph cards. So things that benefit from having colorless creatures or face down cards or build arounds for that thing. And it's funny, I've actually played a morph cube. It was like a morph kind of uncommon cube.
Mm-hmm.
And the designer, Adam, had made it so that if you played Karns of Tarkir, you probably remember this. There was a rule that if two morphs like fought against each other, if you had under 5 mana, no morph would eat the other morph. They'd either pillow fight or trade, but you wouldn't have a morph that would eat the other one.
What?
There was a rule in Karns of Tarkir. Did you remember that?
I didn't draft that set. Wait.
It's so a really cool rule. So basically, if you morph a creature down, because there are some cards that morph and flip for free. If you morph two cards and you had less than 5 mana open, if you attacked with a morph into their morph, you weren't going to get gotten. At worst, they would trade or they would pillow fight, but not one wouldn't eat the other. And that was a new rule. Like Wizards did that intentionally because there's so much anxiety about attacking a morph into another morph.
Wait a minute. I did not know this rule. I'm so sorry. So I attack, I have a morph, you have a morph.
Mm-hmm.
I have 7 mana, so I've, or whatever, but 4 of my mana is tapped. Mm-hmm. So I have 3 untapped mana.
Mm-hmm.
I attack you, you block with your morph. What are the potential outcomes here?
That they'll either trade with each other, or I'll flip it, but it'll turn into like a 1/4 or something. So I won't actually kill your morph. So it always made it so that once you got past that turn, like once you had enough mana, suddenly blocking morphs became really scary because that's when you knew that you could just get blown out. Like your opponent would flip it over and it becomes a 5/5. You're like, well, there's my 2/2. Bye-bye.
That's crazy. What?
I'm dead serious. I am dead serious. I can't believe you didn't know this.
This KTK, you KTK players were babied. That is not... Let me tell you something about the anxiety and Onslaught block. You swing in, you've got... Someone swings into you with a morph. Do you block it? If you do, hello, Battering Craghorn, 3/1 first strike. You just lost your creature. Oh, you didn't block it? Take 2. Guess what? I'm going to unmorph Skirt Commando and kill your morph anyway. So it doesn't, like, this was like, I mean, I cannot believe this is like morph on easy mode.
This was basically Wizards, and like, they had an article. I am not 100% sure 5 is the cutoff. I believe it is. I can't remember exactly, but Wizards literally just went out there and said like, hey, we learned some lessons from Odyssey Block, aka people get anxiety attacking and blocking with morphs. So we've made it so that it's this way.
I'm sorry. I did not know this. In my mind,
I just blew
so
Mosh's
right
mind.
Now.
Can't believe it.
I mean, there was a lot of anxiety. Like, is that a zombie cutthroat?
Yeah, because there's a lot of things that can go wrong if you're attacking a huge morph into a little morph, but these rules made it so that it was like it removed that like stressor. And Adam's cube also did that. It respected the same rule that that you were not going to eat somebody else's thing if you just attacked with less than X mana.
Last on this one, I don't want to derail too much. Is this just for Khans draft, or is this true of any limited format with morphs?
This is only true for Khans block.
Okay, just for Khans block. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just for my own edification.
Yeah,
okay,
so if you go back to the Odyssey cards, that starts happening again. Though in this case, Adam made it so that his cube respected those rules. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. Good old Onslaught. It's you need to have that anxiety. I don't know. I think it's good.
You just want to feel something.
Yeah. Okay, it's Synthetica and the Morph Cube. See, I mean, I think he's got it right here. I'm looking at it right here.
Yeah,
Skirt Commando, Battering Crack.
Yeah, he is talking about how this one in this Morph Cube, it is like stressful to attack because anything could happen. The cube Synthetic is talking about is a different cube than the one I drafted.
Oh my gosh. I made, at Savory Loaf writes, I made a Silver Age cube. The idea was to highlight some of the more forgotten sets. It includes only cards from after the reserve list up until the border change, aka Mercadian Mass through Onslaught Block, which is... That's like a little bit, basically like my cube, right? I go further into shards, but that's just funny. I have toyed with the idea of, should I update or should I just keep it time bound? And I think having a time bound cube.
Oh, I think that is a really cool way to address your cube. Is like some people, I know that there's some like old school cubes where the cards all the cards that are legal in the old school cubes are from old school. And that way you can keep changing things within that time boundary.
I think that, yeah. And I think that's pretty funny. And you know, what's funny is how relevant there are so many subsequent rules to the way rules changes to Magic that it actually becomes a thing, right? Yeah. Like you can actually go back and update those old.
No, absolutely. I mean, Magic. People keep playing old school and they keep discovering things about that meta from like back in the day, you know, like this is an evolving thing. This one's the cool one. This was by Dano Stinkus. I think, I'm sorry if I butchered your name. I'm making a cube with no generic mana.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So everything is going to have pips, which means that something like lands are really important in this cube in particular, because you better have the colored cost to actually pay for your spells.
This is such a weird thing. Like this also highlights the importance of knowing, like if you have a cube, you better educate people on what's in the cube. If it's this far off the beaten track, because you could see sitting down and to a cube like this and just not understanding what the goal was and completely butchering the draft, right? You need to be upfront with everyone, like what they're sitting down and getting involved with, because things can go awry real, real quick. At Split Card Cube, look, warning, I think you already know what the theme of this cube is.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, at Split Card Cube says, in my cube, every card is a split card of two existing Magic cards. One side is a permanent, the other is a spell. Hey, at Split Card Cube, maybe make some of those split cards lands now. That's what we're seeing in Zendikar Rising. So this is perfect. Like, what a great set. Can you imagine? They must be looking at Zendikar Rising saying, oh my gosh, there's tons of stuff I can just put in my cube now.
Yeah, right? No, cards. For sure. I've seen a lot of people talking about like, wow, this cube or this set is going to change and make me change my cube a lot.
Oh my gosh. Until you said that and we read this comment, I hadn't thought about that. But that's true. There's a lot of really good stuff here.
Cool stuff for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved this suggestion. I thought it was so cool. This is by Foxes for Sale. A friend of Foxes for Sale does their own remastered versions of Cube. So you know how like Tempest Remastered came out, Amonkhet Remastered? Those were basically done by Wizards where they took a look at the set, they changed up some stuff. And the idea is like, hey, it's back, but it's different and it's better than ever. So this person is basically making cubes where they're making their version of a remastered set for that specific set.
Oh, mm-hmm. I love that. That's a great idea.
It's so cool. They swap out commons and uncommons in and out to try to bolster the archetypes that weren't weak or like that weren't strong enough or help the weak archetypes. And it's more like a feel. Like, you know how a lot of times you get into these sets and you're like, huh, that mechanic looked like it was good, but it really didn't play out very well. Like, if you remember Gatecrash, Dimir was one of the archetypes there. And Dimir was bad. It was really bad. It was the worst. Cypher was a very difficult mechanic to understand. But also what happened is Gatecrash was really aggressive. It was a really fast format. And Dimir was just like super slow and dirtily. And so if you took a look at that set and you wanted to be like, huh, let's make this better. They could have maybe added different cards to change out the commons and uncommons to make Dimir more powerful or more, maybe Boros less good. So like, that's something that this person's doing, which is really interesting.
This is fun too, because there's so many of us who we talk about bans all the time. So many of us want to jump into that R&D seat, right? We're Monday morning quarterbacking these things. Like, well, why did they do this? And why didn't they do this? Why'd they make Dimir so slow? You know,
World
so fast. Here's your chance to fix it. Here's your chance to make it right. Right. So it's like, I think it engages this other side of us. Like, well, if I controlled R&D or if I did these things, and Cube is such a wonderful opportunity to do that, that I think, you know, you should take that opportunity if that's something that you feel really passionate about. We've got Steve Sunu. Do you know Steve? He actually works at Wizards of the Coast.
Oh, that's awesome. I was actually just looking over their suggestion. I thought it was really sweet. It's funny. It's different.
Yeah. So at Steve Sunu, shout out to Steve. A good friend of mine and I put together a two-drop cube. No X spells, just actual two-drop spells. It's different. There were ellipses there.
I like the emphasis.
Yeah. I don't know if that is an endorsement for the two-drop cube, But one of the things that, the reason I want to bring this up, one of the things this highlights is you can set very narrow limits for a cube, and it's a challenge, mm-hmm. right? And this isn't so much, challenge one is, okay, what two drops we put in? And then you start playing it and you're like, okay, is this working? Is this not working? Where do we need to pivot to? What themes do we need to bring out? And there's a huge, I think, I see a cube idea like this. And I'm like, okay, phase one is like, what do we put in it? And then phase two, there's so much judging of the different, like, what's this archetype doing? What's this color identity? And you have such this narrow limit of two drops that it becomes kind of fun just playing and tinkering with the DNA.
How far down the bottom of the barrel do you have to scrape to get all the two drops you need for this?
Yeah, well, what's the worst two drop in this cube?
I'm sure there's some real bad. I mean, if it's a two drop, you're talking about 540 cards or 360 cards that are all two drops, and you might start getting some bad ones once you get to that point.
How much mana in your 40 card deck if it's a two drop cube? How many lands?
God, I have no idea. You definitely want to get reliably to four so you can deploy like two drops.
You can double spell.
I don't know, 15, 14?
I was going to say 14, yeah. That's just wonky. But those are the other things that start to happen, right? Is you're like, wait a minute, how many draftables do I need?
Yeah, here? And determining which lands you put in your cube is like a big thing for cube designers. This one's, speaking of, you know, lands, this one's cool. This one's by Sev Shields. It is a gold cube, where the goal of the cube is to be able to comfortably arrange 3 to 5 colors in every archetype for every player.
I love that.
So I think you would like this, right? If you like
drafting my gold.
I know. Yeah, so go green, the whole big point of this cube is it's going to be very high in the number of multicolored cards it has, but it's also probably going to be plentiful in fixing. So you can actually be able to reliably cast 3 to 5 spells, or 3 to 5 colors of worth of spells.
I think, and this isn't a strategy podcast for cube, but I do want to circle back to one of the things Gabby said earlier, which is, this came up a bit when we mentioned signets instead of moxes. Fixing is so, it is so crucial in cube. Most cubes, like every cube, you know, can be different as we're talking about here, but in your kind of, I would say, generic run of the mill cube, fixing is super important. Like I have certain times in Jeff's cube, I would, because like I said, I loved 5-color go big. I would first pick a dual land, you know, OG dual land. First pick, no problem.
Oh, generally, that's a reasonable pick almost anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like generally when you're almost committing to an archetype there, because if you can go, if you see enough like OG duels or signets, you can start picking all these colors. And then your next two packs, you're like, well, I've got all this great fixing. I'm just going to take the best color, the best cards, the best gold cards or whatever color cards in all these packs because I have so much great fixing. And that's, I love that. That's what I'm saying. Like, I love that aspect of it. But let's see, we have, Papa Paint, who says, I made an Oko cube where every player starts with Oko in the command zone. I know it sounds crazy, but it's actually led to a ton of extremely interesting and complex games. The reason this sounds crazy is because it's almost like your commander can invalidate so many strategies. But then I have my commander too. So it's weird. Like,
So one of the reason I think that's a really interesting approach is because in that format, the format where people were sick and tired of playing against Oko, a lot of the games came down to who deployed an Oko first and the person who did it would win. But a lot of the games also were very interesting because when both players were able to get an Oko out and stabilized, you got into these really complex, intricate board states. And they were really interesting to play out, but only because you both had Oko out, because that kind of like invalidated in some ways both of them, and you had to figure out a way to break through their defenses through a lot of 3/3s that your opponent had. So I can see if both players start with it in the command zone, it can just maybe turn those games into like the really long, drawn out, complicated games, which can be very fun.
Yeah, those could be. I like some of those longer drawn out games, as I mentioned with the power stuff. So
this cube suggestion is super cool. Okay, so DJ Hoffma says, I turned a Magic into a deck building game a la Dominion via cube. Self graveyard exile effects are as powerful as trashing in deck building games. So my old copy of False Memories, yes, this is a Magic card, is broken. And so multiple people in this thread were like, that's so cool. Like, can you send us the cube list? And DJ Hoffma said that they're going to write up the rules for how they did this and include it here in the thread. So there's, not even playing necessarily Magic. They just found a way to turn it into like a deck builder, like a Dominion sort of game.
That sounds so awesome.
So cool, right?
I got to follow this because I would love to play. I mean, this is a bit of a tangent. Actually, cube, this is a great connection. I love this. Wow. we were really rewarded. Thank you so much to our listeners and everyone engaging with this thread, because this is just an awesome thing. This is, I never thought we'd go down this route, but this is one of those things I've always thought about, is the Magic IP is a deck building game, or, you know, now that I play a ton of Arena, like a Magic auto battler.
Yeah, and I would love an auto battler so much.
Yeah. And Cube, when you think about it, like the deck building, that to me, Cube is the perfect place. It's a perfect space. Like, how did I think to myself, how did you never make this leap before, Mosh? This is awesome. I'm seriously hyped about this. I'm definitely going to follow up on this. This sounds amazing.
It sounds so cool, right? I really want to see the rules and how it works. I'm super intrigued by the whole notion of it. I think it's awesome.
If it looks good, we'll have to play test it a bit.
Yeah. That sounds fun. Back.
Well, this was, you know, it was a slower news day. I do want to update us. I don't know if you know this, Gabby, but our very own Luis Scott Vargas is currently 2-0 in the Mythic Invitational.
You love to see it. I hope the podcast ages well.
I will say this. I've been, you know, friends with Luis for years and years and years. And there's different ways he talks about tournaments with his various levels of preparation. Luis is a notorious procrastinator and can notoriously underprepare. The way he's spoken about the Jund deck he's playing this weekend having known Luis as long as I have, inspires me with a lot of confidence in his performance.
Yeah, I hope so too. He seemed pretty like he was into his deck. And often, like, players are always like, what did you register? Groan. I don't know. I don't like it. It's this deck, but it's bad because everything else is bad. And it's always that attitude. And I did not get that attitude this time. So I was like, yes, please, Jund deck.
I'm feeling good about it. And the last time I felt this way was Breach in Phoenix. And I get he didn't top 8, but he did well in that event.
Yeah.
You know, and he was pretty hyped. So I do have high hopes. And I hope this little segment ages well, you know, as we progress through the weekend. But I know Luis, and Magic is a game of variance. Okay. So anything can happen, right? But especially when you have conspiracies with Arena, maybe Wizards just doesn't want Luis to win and they program that into Arena. We don't know, Gabby. It could be a thing. But I know Luis, and I know when he feels good and confident about a deck, when he's put the time into the deck, mm-hmm. and he's like, and he did that for this. And that's why I'm super excited. I've definitely been watching his progress.
Me too. I'm just like, here's with fingers crossed, you know, waiting for updates as we record the podcast. But this is super cool, Mashi. I'm glad. It's so cool to see how creative people get with cubes. I think that's one of the things that people most underestimate, is they hear about a cube and they think like, oh, the holiday cube or the vintage cube. And they think that that's how you cube. But that's got nothing on like the all devoid cube that 99.7% of the cards are colorless, or a commander cube that something someone mentioned here. Like Jamie Topples has a cube where only cards featuring cute things. Like you can just do anything. And I think that's what's so cool. So I would love to hear if somebody here gets inspired to build a cube because of the podcast, hit us up. I want to know that.
Oh,
that would make me so happy.
Right. And I want to know what the theme is.
Like, yeah, I want to know what the theme is, of course.
And we do need to need to report back on this deck building mod.
Yes.
We'll call it this cube mod.
I want to see that too. Me too. I'm following the updates.
All right. Well, there you go. It was a bit of a slow news week. So we went to something we both love. We both have a ton of passion for, which is cubing. Give it a try. You know, I think whether it's your friend's cube or whether it's an online cube, I think it's a wonderful way to engage with Magic and really bring out different things that you love and put it. It's easy to do in Constructed. It's easier to do in Commander. It's much harder to do in Limited, to bring that like personal love, passion thing that you love about Magic in. But cube is the way you can do it, I promise you. So, all right, we're up against it. This has been it's been a really fun week. We got to talk about something we love. We got food and then we got cube. So there you go. what else do we need in life? Thank you for joining us this week. I am Mashi Scanlon, the guy on the left at Mashi Scanlon. She is Gabby Spartz at Gabby Spartz. You can find her at twitch.tv/Gabby Spartz. You can find this podcast. If you listen to the podcast, hit subscribe. There's a video version. So you can find that on Channel Fireball. You can find that on youtube.com. Check us out. We also have a code. We do have a code. I started the Monday Meta code, which I'm not going to shout out here. We'll be careful with it. But we do have the Magic FM code. So use that code if you're purchasing things on Channel Fireball, or you want to sign up for CFB Pro, or do you box we buy, you can put Magic FM in the form there. That supports us. That supports this podcast. So we appreciate that. Thank you so much for doing that. Oh, what else did I create? Oh, and you can find us on Twitter at Magic FM Podcast as well. There you have it. That is our podcast for the week. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about Cube. Like I said, something we really, really do love. until next week when we will be back with, I don't know, Mythic Invitational Champion.
Mythic Invitational and Zendikar Rising.
Yeah, but I would love to have Mythic Invitational Champion Luis Scott Vargas on the podcast.
That would be so cool. Fingers crossed.
Wonderful to have. Until then, be wonderful to yourselves. Be wonderful to each other.
Bye-bye.